And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to another edition of Nerdy Notions with Sasha Kaplan.
Hello, I am very stressed and overworked, Sasha Kaplan, but I'm here for you. Holy Toledo, Kirby. I don't even know where to begin with this episode. There's just so much going on that, like, I feel like there's a lot to unpack here. So I think we should take it one step at a time. Step one, we get a flashback to Io and Bucky in Wakanda when Bucky was deprogrammed. And she confirms that Bucky's in fact free, and we see poor Bucky cry, and then he actually smiles because he's happy he's free from brainwashing. So then we return to the present, and Io wonders why he broke Zemo out, says Zemo is a means to an end, and Io's like, okay, but you have 8 hours, I want him, because he killed our king, and this is like, he needs to face, you know, own up to that, yada, yada, yada. I'm like, oh yeah, she'll get him. I guarantee it. So Bucky fills them in about Zemo, or about, Bucky fills Zemo and Sam in about Io and coming in, and the fact that she wants Zemo's head in a pike, which, you know, is not a bad idea. Meanwhile, Carly apparently has demands and she's escalating, even though we don't really get to see what those demands actually look like, but we can probably, you know, put a picture together. Do we know anything about where they're staying? Because they're in Latvia, they're in Riga, and this is a really interesting looking house that has 6-corner stars on the windows and just happened to sort of be floating behind Bucky's head as he talks.
Like, I noticed that. I noticed it too.
Y'all, MCU needs some hardcore Jewish representation up in here. Like, you know, with the amount of Jewish created content they're parading around, they kind of owe to have at least one good quality Jewish character. And no, Moon Knight doesn't count. I'm sorry. He like half counts because he's Jewish, but he got powers from an Egyptian god. So like, come on. Anyway.
I get your powers somehow. I mean.
Fall into a vat of toxic waste like everybody else. Like, really. Get bitten by a radioactive, I don't know, drink radioactive Menashevitz, I don't know. Like, I don't care how it's done, but we need some Jewish representation. Hey, when you reboot the X-Men eventually, let's add some more Jewish kitty as opposed to just kitty. Anyway, so we get a little bit more of the Flag Smashers, and there's something about the Patch Act, which is the traditional, which is designed to reestablish traditional border restrictions and like borders, essentially. They arrive to the refugee place and of course they're weary of strangers. So nobody talks to Sam and nobody really talks to Bucky, but he says, look, I know you're refugees, but there's like a teacher and he says he's not a refugee. They're actually internationally displaced people who I guess were kicked out of their homes when the people who owned those homes came back.
That would still technically be called a refugee.
Yeah, so I don't know what the difference, like, I guess it's a weird, I guess like the term refugee implies that like they were forced to flee or like pushed out of your own home. But they were actually displaced. I think the semantics are irrelevant here, but the fact that he pointed it out is interesting. The teacher guy tells Sam that he knows who Sam is and he doesn't trust him. Like, why? Is it because Sam was an Avenger? Because Sam didn't undo the snap. He was snapped. But he also says that the Repatriation Council people who just scream like they totally know what the hell they're doing, apparently promised like supplies and additional teachers and didn't deliver on any of that. Wait, I'm sorry, a global relief agency making promises and not delivering on them? Am I supposed to be shocked? So Zemo is able to connect with kids by bribing them with some sweets and making it out like he's the only good guy amongst the bad guys so that the kids will only talk to him. Zeebo gets information that he promises to pass along to Sam and Bucky, but sort of on his terms so that he can stay with them longer and be useful.
And I have to say, that coat is fantastic.
I mean, if he wants to look like on it, the one thing that my brother pointed out is like, this is a white man in a funny coat handing out candy to children. I said, well, the good news is he doesn't have a white van.
No, but he has a private jet.
True. So doesn't disqualify him from being creepy. Anyway, Zeebo bargains. He finds out where the memorial is for Mama Danya. Meanwhile, Sharon, Sam needs a favor from Sharon, and Sharon calls him because the power broker's pretty peeved. His, scientist dude got shot by Zeebo in the last episode. So things in Madripoor are about to get funky, or nasty, as she says. So we still have these, like, mentions of the power broker, but he's still the man behind the alleged man behind the proverbial curtain. We don't really know who this person is.
How great would it be if it's like in the movie The Wizard of Oz, you have this big, powerful head, and then you just pull back the curtain and go, oh man, it's you?
I guess it makes me wonder who is the power broker after all of this, because my guess is it's going to be one of those government agents that pushed government people that pushed out fake Cap.
I could see a couple scenarios. I could see like what you just said, a government official. I could see Sharon. I could see Zeebo. You know, they're planting seeds to have you kind of go in different directions of who this person could be potentially, which is not a bad thing. It makes you think, could it be this person? Could it be that person? You know, so it is kind of nice to have that kind of suspense of going, who could it be?
Yeah, I'll give you that. I think it's a fun little mystery. At the same time, I wish we'd get little hints at who it could be. It's more of like, it's just like, at this point, after WandaVision, I'm sort of exhausted with theorizing, so I'm not delving too much into it, but...
Well, don't worry, we have two episodes left after this one.
This is true. We are officially two-thirds of the way through this show. Like, wow. So... the Flag Smashers have a secret stash of the super soldier serum, and they're debating whether or not they're going to use it. Is this the right move? I really gotta give them credit. Carly's not just a psycho. Like, girl's got layers, and I feel like it would have been so easy to just make her like a raging nut job who's focused only on the end goal. But we see, especially in this episode, is there's a lot more to her and what's going on with her. And that, like, despite the things that she's doing, she is taking the time to consider what she's doing. Maybe not as much as she should have, but we'll get to that in a second. So apparently one of the Flag Smashers actually really loved Captain America because he stood for something and he helped the little guy. And that... they needed a leader who looked like them. But this is the question of like, there's a sort of like naivete of like, things used to be just good and bad, and now things are different. I'm like, girl, they were never just good and bad. They were always gray. The difference is you thought they were good and bad. And like, granted, in the comic book universe, it's a little bit easy. In a, you know, superhero universe, it's a lot easier to see in good versus bad. But things kind of got muddled. But she says that like the shield should be destroyed, and that the like Captain America or the shield are a symbol of people that history forgot. I think this has a lot of meaning behind it, because on the one hand, she's saying that like it's an oppressive symbol, yada yada yada, of like American imperialism or something. But I actually think it's something else that she doesn't realize it, because Captain America, Steve Rogers, is essentially the person history forgot. Because Captain America became the symbol, the hero, the Nazi smasher, whatever, the Hydra smasher, right? He's the guy that you saw in the newsreels and in the movies, but nobody talks about Steve Rogers, the person. It's always Captain America or Captain Rogers, right? And they're two different people in a sense, because the public persona of Steve Rogers, which is Captain America, versus actual Steve Rogers are two very different things.
And it's a great seed that is planted for what we see at the end of the episode. So.
Yep. So our two losers, I mean, Walker and
Hoskins.
Battlestar, they arrive, and Walker doesn't want to listen to reason. He sort of shows up, I can't believe you broke him out of jail, and I'm going to be a preachy little...
I like how Bucky's just like, well, technically he broke himself out of jail.
I love Bucky's interactions with Walker a lot, because he's just so done. He doesn't have the patience for this guy. Because Sam, it's sort of like, I think Sam, because of his history and outlook, he sort of like expected nothing less than a government cooked up version of propaganda machine of Captain America. Bucky, because Sam knew Captain America, the symbol, and Steve Rogers, the person, right? He knew both. Whereas Bucky really didn't know Captain America, the symbol, all that much. He just knew Steve. So seeing this guy who was like the, in a lot of ways, the exact opposite of Steve, he just like doesn't even accept him and like refuses to acknowledge his existence as a Captain America, which just makes it so much better. So they have a plan, and the plan is that Sam wants to talk to Carly, and Walker's like, this is dumb. You're dumb. We should just arrest Zemo and arrest her and attack and yada, yada. And I'm like, girl, did you not for somebody who followed Captain America's career, you sure didn't study it very in great detail.
And not only that, but Hoskins kind of steps in and goes, because like Sam has a plan. He has an idea. He wants to talk to him, especially using the experience, which I'm so glad that they brought back up.
I was so glad they brought that up, that he mentored, veterans.
VA, like that. And that he worked at the VA. So it's like, you know, and how he had to talk to people. And like, I love how they brought that back from Winter Soldier. I thought that was great, because it hadn't been talked since. And, you know, and him going like, you know, I have this plan. I want to try to talk to her. I want to try to reason with her. I don't want to go in guns blazing, because it's just going to make it worse. And credit to Hoskins. Hoskins was like, hey, you know, he's kind of like the leveler for Walker.
Yeah,
he really is. So. He's the leveler of Walker. And he goes, you know what, Walker, let's do it. Let's do his idea, because I actually think it has merit. You know, and of course, Walker's like, fine, you only get 10 minutes to try to do it. I'm like, come on, you can't
do
it.
Yeah, my first reaction was like, yeah, 10 minutes is not enough time to talk somebody, you know, off a very, very big, violent, like, edge, right? But okay, 10 minutes. So.
Poor Zemo.
So at first I wasn't sure if the little girl was actually taking them to the memorial, but then she did. And we sort of find out that Mama Danya was kind of like a person that took a lot of people in. She was a teacher. She was a parent. She was what the community needed from her, basically. Very much kind of like the world's greatest foster mom situation.
She's kind of like the Leslie Tompkins of the Flag Smashers.
Oh, yeah.
Because yeah, Leslie Tompkins in Batman was always bringing in the orphans. You can kind of look at Mama Danya the same way in that relation.
Yeah, I think that's valid. I think that's a fair comparison. So she sees Sam and she starts panicking at first. And Sam's just like, he's not doing anything. He's not even in costume. He's very non-threatening. And the two actually start... Meanwhile, Walker actually handcuffed Zemo. That was great. But anyway, so Carly talks about Mama Danya and the struggle. She says, like, one world, one people, and they need to live accordingly. We also see that, like, Walker is, like, really impatient. And this is, like, we saw hints of this last episode. But here, it's almost like he's going through withdrawal or something. Like, it's really weird. He's, like, not okay. And I don't know if it's one of those things where he's just like crippling under the pressure of being Captain America or what it is, but it was just it felt a little bit like a catalyst that like, I wish we could have seen like a little bit more of, but anyway.
Well, I mean, we'll get to that part. We'll get to that part and then I'll bring up my point. Cause I think you do kind of see it.
I mean, we'll talk about Walker more in a bit. So Sam tries to reach Carly, and he's actually working. Like, if he had like an hour, like, I think we could have solved this whole thing. Because Sam really, really tries. And I think he had Walker not lost patience and decided to go in the guns a-blazing, quote unquote, Sam could have reached her and found a different way to do things that didn't involve nonsense. But then we get this, so Carly gets away, and then we get this conversation between Zemo and Sam, where Zemo's like, if you could take the super soldier serum, oh, I'm sorry. During the chase, Carly actually gets shot by Zemo, and all of the super soldier serums burst open. And Zemo—
because Zemo is destroying them.
And Zemo starts destroying them.
Yeah.
But Carly uses that and gets away. And Zemo's like, oh, she's gone. And
No. It wasn't that part. What it was is that he's destroying them. Yeah, you're right. She runs away during that, and then he gets knocked out by the shield by Walker.
So Sam was doing really well until Walker basically ruins it. And there's a comment that says it's easy. Something about it. Walker is like losing and getting impatient. And he says something along the lines of, it's easy for Bucky because he's a super soldier and he has the super soldier serum. I'm like, what part of his life has been easy exactly? Being a Nazi meat puppet doesn't sound like a, you know, frolic through the woods or the prairie or whatever it is, right? Like,
I mean, when we had the Wakanda scene at the beginning of the episode, and you're seeing like Bucky go, Io is like saying the words to try to trigger him, and he's seeing all the memories and he's crying. It's like, does that look like a walk in the park to you? Does that look easy peasy to you, John? No.
Exactly. And like, it's just like, it's so weird. But anyway, so Zemo shoots Carly. Zemo starts smashing the serums. Carly gets away. Walker manages to knock out Zemo. But then he finds a little dose of our little serum and just kind of pockets it. So Carly says that she waited too long, and the power broker is out for blood. Basically, like, do you owe me? I'm going to come and get you. If you don't give me what I want, I'm going to, like, you know, kill you, basically. So she says that they're going to separate them and kill Captain America. I'm like, all right, go for it. Take them. We don't want them. Like, really, take them. So there's this conversation afterwards when Sam and Zemo are talking back in the totally not Jewish apartment. There were even little stars on the freaking glasses. Explain this to me. Anyway, where Zemo's like, would you take the serum if you had the chance? And Sam's like, no, I wouldn't.
Like, no hesitation.
Like, none. He's just like, no. And honestly, the only reason that Steve took the serum was because that was part of the whole thing, that they needed this perfect soldier, and Steve fit the bill that they needed, and he was scrawny, asthmatic, and like, I don't know how he survived to adulthood kind of a thing. So for Steve, it made sense, but it was also a different time, and Steve was motivated by this idea of stopping the bad guys and stopping the bullies. And so for Steve, it made sense to take the serum. Bucky never had a choice about the serum. And so here is Sam, who sort of sees side A, side B, and then you have Isaiah, and he's like, yeah, I don't need that. But it also talks about the fact that at the heart of it, Sam is the person to take up the shield and be Captain America, because he has a good sense of right and wrong. He's a good person at heart, and he knows that he doesn't need the serum. And he also makes a point that Zemo talks like a god about, like, because Zemo's whole thing is super soldiers and superheroes shouldn't be allowed to exist. And Sam brings something interesting up. He says, well, what about Bucky? Like, he's a super soldier. Meanwhile, Bucky says that Walker's crazy. Walker shows up and tries to order them to give him Zemo. And Walker just seems to be like, he's itching to punch somebody, like, really, really badly. And then the Dora Milaje arrive to take Zemo. And Walker, oh dear, apparently in 5 years, they haven't realized anything about the Dora Milaje because he seems completely clueless over the fact that these women will kick your ass and do it in a very, very, very quickly and without giving a single fuck.
And one of the crazy things is like, I mean, you get a really, I mean, you get a cool fight scene where it's like, it's Battlestar and Walker taking on the Dora Milaje, and Bucky and Sam and Zemo are just kind of just standing off to the side going like, should we do something? And then they start cheering on John, like, come on, John, you can do this.
It's like, remember in Aladdin when the genie is under the control of Jafar, right? And Aladdin is fighting Jafar, and he's like, Aladdin, he's our man, yeah, yeah. And he's cheering for Aladdin. He's like, and Jafar yells at him, like, what are you doing? So you have this flag. He's like, yeah, Jafar, he's our man. It felt just like that. And I really liked it. The one thing I will say is I feel like Aya was a little excessive, whereas like Sam wasn't trying to fight her. He was just trying to have a conversation. And then she disables his arm for like no reason, which like not cool.
Like Bucky was just like, wait, you could do that? And she's like, yeah, I know the pressure points. I'm the one who helped make the thing.
Right, but like there was no need for it because Bucky wasn't trying to hurt her. He wasn't trying to fight her. He wasn't like, he wasn't betraying her in any way.
Sam and Bucky just really jumped in because they didn't want them to kill them.
Yeah.
That was the key thing. That was like, we don't want you to kill them. And one of the things that really blew Walker's mind is like, especially the fact that they threw the spear, and then when they pull the spear out, like, and this is, I'm going to throw this note out there now. This is also the first time in Captain America's shield is claimed by a Wakandan, in this case, a member of the Dora Milaje, at least in the MCU. Maybe in, you know, the comics, it was done, you know, maybe Black Panther might have held it at one point or something like that.
Probably.
But in the MCU, this is the first time a Wakandan has technically claimed the shield.
Well, claimed, I think, is the wrong word, but well, yeah, I see what you mean.
That's what the note says, you know, so I'm going to follow the notes. But at Io's behest, the shield is actually immediately returned to John Walker. And the thing that John goes on about is like, wait a minute, they don't have the super soldier serum in them. Like, he's completely dumbfounded. Like, and as you mentioned before, it's like, obviously he didn't do his homework, but he's like, and it shows here because he's just completely dumbfounded because he just had his ass kicked by these women.
To be perfectly honest, I really don't understand how he can live in a world of like super spies and aliens and magic
and wizards,
yeah, and robots, and be dumbfounded that a bunch of skilled warriors could kick his ass. It seems like, I think he in some part is on the serum or on a very diluted dose of the serum because there's probably not a specific amount of supply because we learned from Nagel last episode that the CIA was working on the serum, but then the blip and 5 years and stuff like that. And then priorities changed. And so it's possible they had some version of the serum that
I also think, because we're also missed the conversation that took place. And that's after John finds the one serum.
Yeah. Do you mean the Walker conversation?
The Walker-Hoskins conversation. You know, they're having, like, Hoskins is having this conversation with Walker. And the way Hoskins talking, and this is at least to me, it actually sounds like there is some serum in Walker already because of some of the stuff. And, you know, and I don't think Hoskins knows, or at least in this scene, knows that Walker has a vial of that serum. So, and that's something that I kind of took away from that scene. It's like, you know, because Hoskins like questioning the entire thing in general.
So. Hoskins is definitely the voice of reason out of the two. And so this entire thing is like, I think it's two parts. He's definitely being juiced up on something because he just has to be, because he's going through those symptoms of withdrawal. He's agitated. He's moody. It lines up. I think it makes me wonder if there was some like earlier, less perfected version than the one that is current that the CIA or whoever it was gave to Walker, even without his knowledge, potentially. Because, you know, the government just loves randomly injecting people and not telling them about it.
Oh yeah, this is penicillin. It totally is.
Yeah. So what I will say to that is we see that, like, in this conversation, we see that Walker, he's not intentionally a bad person, right? He doesn't, like, he's an, what did I call him a couple episodes ago? Like, an unintentional douchebag? But I think so. He is a person who's gone through hell. Like, he mentions that, like, you know, Hoskins mentions his, like, 3 Medals of Honor, and he's like, I got them for basically going through hell and suffering, you know, yada, 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 which means he, like, doesn't care about the publicity of it. But he feels, and I don't know where this pressure is coming from, because it's not like there's somebody breathing over his neck directly. So there's definitely a lot more going on with him. But Walker does, what I really love is the fact that because this is essentially a 6-hour movie, we really get to see the, and this is kudos to the writers of the series, because all of the characters are so distinct and they have such complexities to them that it's really, it's definitely a testament to the writing.
Yep, definitely agree on that.
So, Sam makes one mistake with Carly. He mentions his sister, Sarah, which, like, boy, you really got to stop name dropping. But so Carly calls Sarah and they have a weirdly nice conversation of somebody that's like low-key threatening to kill you. You know, they have, like, they have things in common, and it culminates basically in, like, Sarah's like, he's not my Captain America. I'm like, don't worry, he's not mine either. Like, because this is not Captain, like, Walker is not Captain America. He is the propaganda Captain America, right? It's like if Steve Rogers never actually became the hero Captain America and just stayed the government propaganda machine. Because this is like the guy they would come out to support McCarthyism, you know, like they would roll him out. And yeah, so they have this nice conversation, which basically culminates in, like, you know, tell Sam to meet me or else I'm going to have to come and visit you and your kids and yada, yada, yada. Meanwhile, Sharon is tracking Walker, I guess, because she calls Sam and lets him know. So there's, it culminates in a fight because Sam and Bucky arrive and then Walker arrives and it's this really crazy fight.
Well, what it is I think they're tracking Walker because obviously they don't trust what he's going to do. And so Sam and Bucky are there meeting with Carly, and the next thing you know, Walker is going to a completely different location, I guess, looking for Carly. And they catch the feed off of that thanks to Sharon. So they go to where he's going to stop him from trying to do whatever the heck he's trying to do. Because obviously, whatever he's trying to do is obviously going, obviously, the opposite of what Sam and Bucky are trying to do.
Right. So Hoskins gets captured and knocked out, but he manages to cut himself free after he wakes up. And Walker goes after Carly. Walker, we see that he can bend metal as he's looking for Hoskins, and Sam is like, what did you do? And Walker's like, I don't have time for this right now, they have Hoskins.
Well, the scarier part is the flag smasher, because, like, he sees the metal get bent, he just has the look of, like, oh crap,
it's like, oh shit, I'm in trouble now.
Like, he just has this look on his face like, oh, I didn't see that coming. You know,
so there is a really awesome knife fight. I'm glad they remembered Sebastian Stan's amazing knife abilities that he gained during Captain America Winter Soldier, because that was good to see.
I like Walker's line is like, where are all these knives coming from?
Right. But something happens. Hoskins gets kicked.
By Carly.
And he hits the wall and he doesn't get up.
He did.
And you just see the flag smashers basically run away, and Walker, just something kind of clouds over him, and he finds one of the flag smashers. He pursues one of them, and not only does he kill them, but he kills this flag smasher out in the open by just, like, ramming the shield into this guy in full view of the public with their cell phones out.
And which is ironic, because this episode is called The Whole World is Watching. That's the title of the episode, which, by the way, the title of this episode is a line from Black Panther when Okoye warns T'Challa of the exact same thing when he prepares to execute Ulysses Claw in front of a large crowd of bystanders who are all recording his actions on their smartphones. Talk about smart writing.
I mean, the writing here, the only thing that really disappoints me is, like, I feel like there's potential for a lot of, like, dabbling into, like, the Jewish aspect of Steve and Erskine and that part of it. And heck, even Bucky, because he's a combination of not just Bucky Barnes, but Arnie Roth. And it's just, it feels like that, like, that part I felt like maybe could have been added to really enrich the story and really add layers to sort of the, first of all, the diversity of the story and the cast of characters, and just kind of add an unnecessary layer. But Jews are Schrodinger's minority, I know, so I can't really expect much. That being said, there's two episodes left and there's still a lot to wrap up, because we got to know what the hell is going on with Psycho Boy. We need to stop the Flag Smashers, which are probably going to double down. But give Carly credit, though. She did at least look horrified and like, oh, God, I killed somebody by myself and not like blowing up a building.
I think honestly, that look wasn't more of the I killed somebody. It was I killed somebody in front of the person that was trying to make peace with me type deal. Because remember, Sam in a way was trying to make peace, because the look on Sam and Bucky's face when it happened too was like, oh shit, this isn't good. Like, they were kind of distraught a little bit about it. Like, not like, oh, heartbroken over Battlestar, because they thought he was kind of a dickhead too, but not as much as Walker, obviously. But like, especially from Sam's point of view, when you look at it from the look on his face, it's like, you just took it to the point of no return now.
Yep, this is it. And this is also, I think, the point of no return for Walker too, because the government now has a very big and public mess to clean up. But I think ultimately, whatever is happening with Walker will, you know, tie back to the Repatriation Council and the government and somebody else. Sharon definitely knows more than she's telling. There's definitely a lot more going on with her. I mentioned this last week, I really don't want them to make her the bad guy or the power broker, because it's just too easy. And I think I kind of like this Sharon so far. She's interesting. So I would want to see where she goes a little bit more beyond, because I don't want to see her turn into a bad guy, unless the power broker turns out to not be the bad guy, which seems unlikely. So yeah, so there's still a lot of loose ends to tie up. There's still the question of like, what are we going to do with the shield? And I think, honestly, I think Bucky and Sam should just steal the freaking shield. Like,
at that point,
they really should. It's a, like, also, not cool, but Walker got the shield. He did the shield dirty. He did it really dirty. I don't think we've ever seen the shield covered in blood.
No, we've seen it with where the bullets hit and stuff like that. And we've seen it scratched with Black Panther's claw. We've seen it broken.
And, like, dirt. And maybe like a little bit of, like, I don't know, Tony's blood or something like that, because they were all bloody in the Civil War.
The only thing that was on it from that fight was the claw scratches from Black Panther.
That's right. Yeah. So this is that question of, like, now the shield means something very different.
Like, the shield has been soiled.
He has desecrated the shield. That is what this is. This is not up for debate. John Walker has desecrated the shield and has desecrated Steve Rogers' non-existent grave. Because this isn't just, oh, he killed somebody. He killed somebody with a national symbol. He killed, like, you can paint it that he killed a terrorist or whatever, but it doesn't quite shine that way when you get it all on tape. And it's one of those things that like there's going to be a big mess to clean up, and there's going to be a lot that still need, there's still a lot that needs to be wrapped up, including the ultimate question of who is worthy of the shield and what is the message ultimately of the film, or of the show, and who, I mean, it's obviously leading up very much, I think, to two things. One, Bucky going out on a path on his own. Two, there is one thing we didn't talk about, actually. Zemo escaped during the fight between the Captain America reject and the Dora Milaje. He escaped through a tunnel underneath the bathtub. I mean, it's obvious where he'll go. He's probably going to go to the memorial. But it's interesting that we didn't touch upon that. But I think what I hope, at least, is that the season, the show ends with Sam becoming Captain America, or some version of Captain America, a Falcon Cap version, if you will. And that Bucky goes out on a path to try to not just make amends, because I think Yuri will come back, but to build a life away from this. Because one of the reasons that one of the things that lacked about Steve in the MCU is his lack of a real life, because most of them didn't have one. Like, Tony had Pepper, Clint had his family, and that was about it. The others didn't have like a life outside of this.
Well, you could say Thor did.
Okay, well, as the movies continued, he had less and less. But yes, like, he had a whole world, he had his people, he had family in he had family. You're right. But Steve lacked a real life. And if the show goes in a direction that I think it should go, then Sam becomes Falcon Cap, or, you know, Captain America with wings, however you want to phrase that. And I would hope that Bucky first tells Yuri what happened to his son, but ultimately sets out on a path to figure himself out, to be a person outside of this legacy and outside of this mess and outside of everything, like superheroics. Because baby boy needs a real life. And maybe that'll harken back to the therapist lady saying that you don't have friends. He needs to go out and make some friends. He needs to go maybe to Chicago, find a nice Jewish lawyer named Bernie Rosenthal, like make a family, have a community, have people around him that are not part of this life.
Yep.
We shall see what happens.
We got two episodes left. So,
and each episode is still roughly around 50-ish minutes, which is pretty good. So
I'd be okay with the last episode being like an hour and a half. We're not going to get it that way, but it would be kind of cool.
Combined, the two episodes will be about an hour and a half. Maybe if not, maybe they'll be at 2 hours total, because it would make sense, because there's still a lot to wrap up.
Yep.
We shall see. We shall see.
Yep. So with that, you can find me on Twitter at @thelindenbaum75. Facebook at facebook.com/x75productions, Twitch at twitch.tv/themichaelx75. Just a heads up, I am starting a new job, which means my schedule for Twitch is going to change. And other things are going to change too, for the better, thankfully. Sasha knows what I'm talking about on that one.
Yeah.
It took you a second, but yeah, that.
Well, usually when you do the whole find me on the social media things, I'm reading text messages.
Yeah, that's fine. And then, of course, everything's on the website, txhdhockey.com. And then for the show, /nerdy-notions. I know I took away that, Michael, where can you find you on social medias? Because we got to kind of wrap, because then I got to record another episode real quick, because you're on a time crunch. The other guy's on a time crunch.
We're all on a time crunch. So let me keep this short.
It's time crunch Friday, everybody.
You can find me at geekgirl101.tumblr.com, Geeky Kaplan with a K on Twitter after the greatest superhero ever, Billy Kaplan, and Instagram. If you're on Instagram, it's Geeky Captain. And of course, you can read my new article called The Afi Coleman Effect on my website, geekycaptainwrites.wordpress.com, domain name pending.
Domain name pending.
It'll happen eventually. Anyway, thank you for listening, and join us next week as we continue our journey through Captain America and Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
Woo! Walker's an idiot, bro.